sedative, they have medical experts to testify that it is comparable to death by drowning. So a very painful and terrifying death. Now, the government has argued in response with its own medical experts testifying that they think that the prisoners would be unconscious during this process so that they would not feel the pain. And this is in particular an issue for the execution scheduled on Thursday and Friday for two prisoners who, according to their lawyers, have lung damage from COVID-19.
Isaac Arensdorf, we're going to link to your remarkable pieces at ProPublica. And Sister Helen Prejean, thank you so much, world-renowned anti-death penalty activists. That does it for our show. Remember, wearing a mask is an act of love. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Where it is 8:01. No, it's just still 8 o'clock in the a.m. It's Tuesday. Is that enough information? Well, let's get too much information with your hosts, Tracy Simmons and Abe Proctor. Stay tuned.
Good morning. Good morning. Welcome to Too Much Information on KBOO 90.7 FM. My name is Abe Proctor. Sitting across the virtual divide from me is my co-host, Tracy Simmons. Thank you for joining us this morning. If I sound a little subdued this morning, it's because I am. In case you've been under a rock for the past several days, a gang, a mob, a crowd of rabid right-wing Trump supporters stormed the U.S. Capitol last week and trashed the place. Tracy, I'm sure you noticed this event transpire.
Oh, my goodness. Good morning, Abe, and good morning, listeners. Yes, I mean, oh, my goodness. A year ago, last Tuesday, we were talking about the runoff elections in Georgia, and thank goodness Glenn Ossoff and Reverend Warnock won. But there was no ability to celebrate because, of course, we jumped into this whole insurrection at the Capitol. Thousands of angry Trump supporters with zip ties, explosive devices, long guns, and other weapons showed up at the Capitol, resulting in five dead. One of those was a cop who was beaten to death with instruments of a fire extinguisher. America, definitely a metaphor for something. And another cop who was involved later died of suicide. There were plans potentially to kill Mike Pence, our vice president, Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House, and Minority Leader of the Senate, Chuck Schumer. There are two Capitol Police currently on suspension, and reports had shown that the insurgents found those offices that they were looking for, although no one was there, because they had been directed to the space. We also saw footage of Capitol Police opening up gates and letting folks run through like it was Disneyland. And there was no coordination of response from other agencies because of President Trump's actions to stop that from happening. Later that day, several different senators and at least 132 members of the House voted to not certify the election, although it was certified at about 3-something a.m. It's the craziest time that we're living in. I think I had said early in the year, you know, the hope was to really move on from Trump and Trumpism, but what we're seeing is you know, the fallout from the Republican Party not holding this president accountable for the things that he has been stirring up for the past 5 years. And here we are. Back in Portland, you know, we had Cliff Dents, the Republican from Eastern Oregon, blaming the Portland protesters for the insurrection. We had Mike Nierman letting right-wing insurgents into the Oregon Capitol building to storm that Capitol on the same day as the insurgency in D.C. happened last Wednesday. And then we had Kurt Schrader compare a second impeachment of Donald Trump to a lynching. And you just can't even. You know, I told y'all I was going to name names. I will continue to name names. But what was interesting about the whole insurgent thing is that if anyone has, you know, been researching white supremacy in America, they will know about a book called The Plano Diaries. And in that book, it was basically a blueprint for what happened, except that there wasn't the number of deaths that were depicted in the book. And so there was a gallows erected on the lawn of the Capitol building, supposedly to depict the day of the rope, where, you know, political enemies of the insurgents would be hung, definitely sent a message. Of course, the backlash to all of this is that, you know, folks are finally potentially being held accountable. We know that the second impeachment, which was set forth yesterday, will be decided on tomorrow. And of course, as Democrats started calling for impeachment, we saw the Republican side calling for unity and healing. Now get the F out of here. If you are still bleeding and you still have cancer, there is no opportunity to be healed. I just feel like there's this weird reaction that they know they're in trouble. Of course, corporate funders are walking away from the GOP in droves. We've seen them be deplatformed. They've been kicked off of all of the major social media platforms. And of course, the Trump sycophants who are in the legislature are upset about losing followers. At the same time, we're losing 3,000 and 4,000 Americans every day to a preventable disease, the pandemic. And yet, they're worried about losing followers. So Twitter, of course, banned Donald Trump indefinitely. Facebook has banned Donald Trump indefinitely. And, you know, I think what we're seeing is this realization that this can't stand. The GOP has run its course. And I think, you know, when you look at the GOP under Donald Trump, they've lost the House, they've lost the Senate, they lost the presidency, and they've lost their darn minds. And at this point, you know, they want to placate people. And of course, they are afraid of their own supporters. They have opened the pandemic, the Pandora's box of white terror in the midst of a pandemic.
That they've opened the pandemic, too.
Thousands of people. Exactly. It's a really dark time in America. And for me, you know, just I'm just kind of trying to sit with, you know, is this the last step? Is this what it will take for the revolution that's coming? And, you know, we've heard from our supporters and listeners about a peaceful revolution. I hope so, but I don't know. There's more violence planned to come in the next few days, and so we all need to be vigilant.
We absolutely do. Yeah. I mean, this just begs so many questions. And we've been talking about on this program how the potential for citizen-on-citizen violence or even the specter of violent citizen uprising against the state was entirely a possibility under this president, and that possibility only grew as his imminent ouster approached. We warned as recently as last week that this is the sort of thing we might expect, but I got to say, I was still shocked to see those images coming out of Washington last Wednesday, even though this was something that didn't really come as much as a surprise. it was shocking. That it hurt me to see that. You can call me naive if you want, but there's deep symbolic meaning in the breaching of that building and the absolute disrespect with which it was treated. You mentioned bludgeoning people with the American flag. I've never been much of a flag fetishist. You know, I don't typically fly one. I'm not somebody who, gets all weepy about it or all caught up in its symbolism. But to see it used as a weapon against another free citizen in our republic, I mean, that was shocking to me. It was a connected series of events. You don't get many, direct causal relationships in the political world. You know, you're often looking at what is the proximal cause of this event? Well, it's a whole bunch of factors that overlap in our society. This one, though, was incited by the President of the United States, who addressed a crowd at the Ellipse in front of the White House, told them they need to fight. His family members told them they needed to fight. Trump specifically called out Vice President Pence by name and suggested that Pence himself had the power to overturn this election and that the mob should walk down to the Capitol and make Pence do his duty. And then they did it. That is about as close to a direct causal explanation for events as you're ever going to have in the world of politics. The president incited a riot. The rioters descended upon the Capitol and they trashed the place. And you know what? I shudder to think what would have happened if they had actually managed to locate the people they were trying to find. Several of them have divulged now after the fact that they went there to kill Mike Pence, to hang Mike Pence, to kill Nancy Pelosi and presumably other members of Congress that they could find. And then when they found themselves in the midst of this unfathomable security breach, the representatives and the senators who were in the Capitol had to conceal themselves in hidey holes. They had to remove their congressional pins from their clothing because they knew it would identify them to the invaders and mark them for death. I mean, this is banana republic stuff unfolding in the world's oldest democracy. It was shameful. It was violent. It was disgusting. And now you have people like Ted Cruz accusing President-elect Biden and the Democrats and the rest of the world for sowing division in the face of all of this, saying, oh, at a time of great national divisiveness, all the president and his supporters can do is further flame. What, you fool? You just voted to support a coup d'etat. So don't talk to me about sowing division. This was the darkest day in my political memory, eclipsing even the attacks of September 11th, eclipsing even George W.'s bogus installation in the White House. Every member of the Republican caucus who stood up in support of this coup needs to wear that like a badge the rest of their lives. They should lose their jobs. They should have trouble finding employment anywhere. They should be shamed and shunned wherever they go in polite society. We have no time for these people anymore. They have no interest in the actual business of governing. They are interested in only one thing, and that is the perpetuation of their own power. As Orwell told us, the object of power is power. There is no other explanation needed for the actions of these people. Now, as for the mob that descended upon the White House, upon the Capitol, that's perhaps a bit more of a complicated story. They're not looking to preserve their own elected power, but they're certainly looking to preserve their own power to dictate how society is shaped in the United States and how they move through it. They marched on the Capitol to preserve white supremacy, Tracy, and any other explanation is insufficient.
Absolutely. And the question for me continues to be, what would the response have been if it would have been black and brown folks showing up to the Capitol, armed, strapped, explosive devices, zip ties, ready to kidnap some people? What would the response have been? And what we know is it would have been completely different, right? There would be a lot more people who had lost their lives, and they would look like me. And so just the idea that we can't even talk about that, and we continue to be in denial. This is who we are. This is exactly who we are as Americans. This is exactly what we have fomented for the last 400-plus years, and it's just coming to a head. Sitting in the space of denial does not help us move through this time, does not help us see to the other side. It helps us stay very stuck in this, kind of imaginary ideology of what America is, that is aspirational at best and a cool lie at worst, right? It's just a really crazy time that we're in. And, you know, I've just kind of been kind of doing my daily meditation and sitting with my own emotions, because I just feel like I've just been on the verge of tears. And what it tells me, if nothing else, is that I really do love this country. I want to see us prosper and become a truly representative multiracial democracy. I want to see us live out that aspiration. But what I keep being shown is that the people who want to maintain power and the people who want to maintain white supremacy will burn it all down at all costs. We don't care.
No. They would burn it all down so they could be kings of the ashes. It's horrible. Now, you asked the question, what about the disparity in response had this been a Black Lives Matter march that descended on the Capitol the way these people did? I think we have a pretty good idea of how that would play out. My social media feed last week filled up with pictures showing side-by-side images of the rank upon rank of heavily armed and armored security personnel and law enforcement arrayed on the steps of the Capitol when there was a Black Lives Matter protest this summer a few blocks away. An unbelievable show of force. Barricades far down the block in every direction from the Capitol. None of that happened last week. There are so many questions that were raised. Why, in fact, were the barricades so close to the Capitol? How was this mob even allowed to approach as closely as they did? How come, when we've known for weeks that this was going to happen today, when all of the tea leaves were there to be read by anyone who cared to read them, why was this allowed to happen? The answer, I'm afraid, is pretty short and pretty disappointing, and that is it was allowed to happen. There is no other explanation for the D.C. police, the Metro Police, and the Capitol Police for stepping down and abdicating their duty in the way they did, other than the fact that they were willing, at least enough of them were, to facilitate this. Now, this might be hard to get your brain around, but here's a way you can get your brain around it. Law enforcement in the United States was not designed to stop white violence. It was designed to be an arm of white violence. This was not the system malfunctioning. This was the system functioning as designed. And we've had anecdotal reports emerge as the days have gone by. Interestingly, this is one of the rare events that becomes more terrifying the more you learn about it in retrospect. We've learned that those Capitol Police who were on duty and did try to do their jobs, did try to protect the building and the personnel inside, they were confronted by invaders who flashed their badges. There were law enforcement officers from all over the country in that mob. They flashed their badges to the Capitol Police. They said, hey, man, hey, come on, let us in, you know. Hey, we're all on the same side here. Law enforcement in the United States exists to uphold white supremacy. And there will never be a more clear example of that than what we saw last week.
Just a nasty detail of all of this is that, you know, some of these people went in there and smeared doo-doo on the walls and on the floors and on the surfaces in the middle of a pandemic. And, you know, you just have to wonder, whose doo-doo was it? Whose doo-doo did you touch? Was it yours? Was it somebody else's? I mean, just the nastiest, you know. And so I think back to, you know, our homegirl, Hillary Clinton, and the term deplorable. And what I can say is that was a polite comment. That was a nicety. That was being very, very civil, because what we've seen is that these people are literally disgusting.
You know, in fact, you may have just put your finger on the central question of the Trump era, which, of course, is whose doo-doo did you touch? And that applies to the last 4 years and beyond. Okay. In an attempt to help us make sense of this all, we are very proud to welcome today to the show renowned Portland activist, journalist, and philosopher Mac Smith. Mac, welcome to the show. Thank you so much.
That's a heck of an intro. Thanks so much, you guys.
I think Tracy's got a couple questions for you to start things off, and we're hoping that during our time on the show today, you're going to help us put this whole event in some sort of perspective, and maybe we'll talk about some ways we as a society can collectively move forward from this. And if we have some time at the end, we'll take some calls. So go ahead, Tracy.
Yeah, hey, Matt, thanks for joining us. We so appreciate you.
Good morning.
You know, I guess the first question I have to ask is, you know, when you saw this happening and you thought about the juxtaposition between the response to an armed white mob versus a not armed peaceful protest here across the country through the Black Lives Matter movement and the response to the murder of George Floyd, what was going through your mind to see this all playing out?
I mean, as soon as I realized that these folks were going to, you know, storm the Capitol because it's a revolution or whatever, I was like, oh, shoot, they're going to compare this to us. That was my first thought. And for me, that's been the central thing is, like, this has nothing to do with us. Like, this is, I think it's cool to make comparisons about how much differently they've treated their actual, you know, insurrectionists versus us as protesters, or they call us rioters. But in reality, this is how they've always treated white riots. You know, if you look at Malheur, if you look at the cops that got shot, you know, down in the Cali by Boogaloo Boys this last year, I mean, there's never really a huge response to white violence. It's like that is reserved for black people and things that we care about, and the gays and the women and everyone else. So if it's white Christian men, that's just white violence. That's not something that they're really equipped or ready, or anyone is really equipped or ready to actually deal with. At least not against the state.
And so, of course, you know, we had Oregon representatives saying it was Antifa. We had Kevin McCarthy saying that it was really Antifa. And of course, the white, you know, insurgents got on their Facebook and their TikTok and, you know, were like, no, it was us, right? which was interesting, right? Because here you are unmasked doing these things. And what's interesting for me is just to witness that and to have them, you know, in the kind of style of Al-Qaeda claiming responsibility for their actions. But now it's, you know, we don't want to hold people accountable. I've heard some of the folks who, you know, were involved in this have, you know, been put on a no-fly list and can't go home. Oh, no, what a terrible consequence of your actions. But then we start hearing all of this nonsense about cancel culture. And, you know, I have a real hard time with cancel culture. I'm just wondering what you think about people labeling the response to these people's terrible behavior as part of a system of cancel culture.
You know, I think that the Chuds and them have really done a great job of taking every term and just bastardizing it. You know, to say that I tried to do a coup and then I'm getting canceled, that's not what that is. That's ridiculous. That's crazy talk. You know, it's kind of like they're saying, "Oh, we got treated differently than Antifa did for standing outside the PPA." It's a different thing when you storm the Capitol. So you're not going to get the same result. You can't just use our terms and do something different and then complain something different happened. Like, duh. Like, you know, it's like I don't even know how to do that. That's like, it's like a cartwheel or something with a logic that just, it's very difficult. It's like an aerial with logic. There's no hands involved. You know, it's wild. I've just never heard people, it's like if I eat, it's like this guy that injected mushrooms into his veins, you know, because he used to inject heroin. And he's like, well, that other one didn't kill me. Of course, that wasn't mushrooms, bro. Yes, it's all drugs, but there's a difference. It's like you have to pay attention and have, like, and look at the details. And this is really a result, I think, of these chuds on Parler and everything else just standing in an echo chamber and really just yelling at themselves, telling themselves lies after lies after lies, and really exaggerating what has happened all last year to the point that they've decided that they can do this same thing and did something absolutely different. Like, it's like a horrible game of telephone.
Yeah.
Not even a terrorist attack in real time could shock them out of their universe of alternate facts. We saw just a few hours after a mob stormed the Capitol and tried to kill him, you had a Republican congressman and former star of Beavis and Butthead, Matt Gaetz, go up in the well of the House and say that it was Antifa who just tried to kill all of them. I mean, it's just beggar's belief.
The only person I saw there, and I've done a pretty big job of trying to track who's who around here, but the only person I saw down there that could have even been considered Antifa is that guy from Utah, the activist John guy that all the Antifa folks think is a cop.
Yep.
And he was on MSNBC. He was right there at the Capitol. He recorded the shooting, all this other stuff. And he's the only one. And that's why we never trusted him here and never liked him here and told him to go home. Because we didn't, because we always knew he was out there just the clout chasing. But just his existence there, his presence there, had people saying, oh, look, here's evidence of Antifa. And that's why I was, you know, telling folks last week, don't go out there. The thing that they're doing out there has nothing to do with us, and our presence is only going to make it way worse.
Yeah, yeah.
Let these white people rock.
So, of course, there were some senators who, right after this, after they had been cloistered, of course, you know, spreading, many of them, because they were unmasked, spreading COVID to their other congressional leaders, who went on record and, you know, objected to the Electoral College vote that same night. I always tell you I'm going to name names. So, of course, Josh Hawley, who lost his book contract and seemed really upset about that as opposed to all the other stuff he'd done. Senator Ted Cruz, Tommy Tuberville, Cindy Hyde-Smith, John Kennedy, and Roger Marshall all got on record and said that they were still going to object to the Electoral College vote and drag that process out. You know, it was, of course, symbolic. What do you think we should do with people who have, you know, pledged an oath to the state, have pledged an oath to the country to defend the Constitution, and, you know, in this way are literally perpetuating the lie that it's a stolen election, perpetuating the lie that something has been rigged? What do we do with those folks? Because what I'm hearing is all the calls for unity are foreshadowing not doing anything for these people to hold them accountable.
Yeah, that's, I mean, you know, restorative justice is always talked about when it comes to rich white people, but it never happens for anybody else, right? But that's like what it is. Like, they think, well, maybe if we let these guys get away with it, it'll be okay. Like, that's what they said about Hitler, though, right? So, I mean, it's obvious that these people have to be, like, censured. Like, there's really no way around it. And that's, you know, from the perspective of folks who are trying to really uphold, you know, this country and what it stands for. I mean, I have issues with the basis of this country and what it stands for. So for me, it's kind of just like I'm just watching to see who wounds who, because really it's the same people. Like, you know, if you see two dogs fighting, you don't get in the middle, right? Because you're going to get bit. Like, these people are the same people. As we speak, they are investigating how many of the Oregon police, you know, especially the state and county police, were a part of this mob. It's the same people. So, like, if I've been concerned with the cops all year, all decade, really, and now I'm dealing with these insurrectionists who are attacking the cops, but they are the cops, like, I feel like I gotta just stand back and watch a bit and, you know, and see where the damage is done. I don't think it makes sense to really insert myself in the middle of this drama. I'm just watching it. So they do and what they should do, it really depends on what you're trying to save. Are you trying to save the neoliberal government? Are you trying to save America? Are you trying to save the lives of black and brown people like we were all last year? Or have we just forgotten about that because now it's about America? To me, it really mirrors what happened in July when the feds came to Portland. There was a protest about one thing, then the feds came, and it became a protest about a whole other thing. That's happening again now. All of a sudden, this is about America. This is really a rallying point. This is how we're going to save America and bring everybody together. I feel like this is just part of a larger story, you know, that they're trying to bring everybody back together now in some way and pretend that everything's okay. And that's exactly what we were protesting against 6 months ago.
I mean, and that's exactly what history has shown us doesn't work. Right, when we think about the, you know, the Civil War and Reconstruction and bringing the same people who were seditious against the United States government back into government to, of course, install Jim Crow laws around the South and, of course, other places like Oregon, where we had exclusion laws that were on the books for hundreds of years. I don't want to take all of your time. I want to make sure that we open it up for our callers. And so, Abe, if we have any callers or we want to invite people to call in, please, let's
Yes. that opportunity. We would love to bring our callers into this conversation. The number to call 503-31-8187. You're listening to Too Much Information on KBOO 90.7 FM. I'm Abe Proctor, my co-host, as always, Tracy Simmons, and we're joined in, well, not in studio. See how, like, automatically I said that? We're joined this morning by Mac Smith. And it sounds as if we lost him. Mac, are you still with us?
We have lost Mac. Sit tight. We're going to get him back.
Okay, we've lost Mac, but we're going to get him back. Okay, so to sum up, a bunch of racists and white supremacists stormed the Capitol last week and trashed it, Tracy, and it looks like many of the people who aided and abetted them within the halls of Congress and whose own lives were threatened might not even pay any sort of price for doing it. Welcome to the United States of America in the 21st century.
I mean, that's really where we're at. I could just say, we really, and what's so interesting, I've been thinking through my head about this, but what if Donald Trump would have been given a second term? What if Joe Biden would not have eked this out? And I just am terrified at just even having that thought experiment of what would this look like in 2024 if this was kind of what we were facing. And, of course, I'm relieved that now we have, the House, the Senate, the presidency. But what I think will happen is because the GOP is so beholden and scared of those Trump supporters that they have unleashed with violence and, kind of placating them all the time, that we will have, as possible as it is, the Republicans will sit and stand as obstructors to anything that the Joe Biden administration wants to push forward. And for me, to have this many people showing up at the Capitol steps because of Joe Biden being elected is laughable. Do you think your life is really going to change, white people, because Joe Biden was elected? Trump supporters, what do you think that's going to happen? And I don't want to get on a Joe Biden bashing case, but Joe Biden is also saying, I don't know about an impeachment. I'm going to lose that to Congress. I don't know about that. It's like, oh my goodness. It drives me insane because, we're consistently, bringing no weapons to an explosive fight, right? These people have zip ties, explosives, guns, long guns, a scaffold, and a noose, right? And here we are, wanting to call for things like unity. And it's just absolutely ridiculous. And to Mac's point, right, it also overshadows, the movement for Black lives, the movement for immigrants in this country, the movement for LGBTQ folks, the movement for women, right, has been overshadowed now by this call to just kind of forget it all and move on and all just get along, right, and the kind of style of Rodney King. And it's infuriating.
All right, we've received word that we have Mac Smith back with us this morning. Mac, welcome. Sorry about the hiccup there.
Oh, no problem. My mom actually called and cut me off, so that wasn't your fault.
Yeah. Come on, Mom.
I know. I love her, though.
Shall we take a call?
Yes, I think we should.
All right, Robbie, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, good morning. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Yeah, so there is some stuff I wanted to bring up. The DC, it's called hashtag DC Blackout. And this is exactly what happened on June 1st, maybe May 29th. But I remember at the heat of the uprising this summer. What was that? Sorry.
No, I didn't say anything. I don't think any of us said anything.
Oh, my bad. The hashtag DC Blackout happened June 1st. Or it might have been May 29th, but the stories, news stories came up all over, and it was saying that there was this weird conspiracy theory, false information going around, hashtag DC Blackout. I was watching the live streams that night. Hashtag DC blackout was when Black Lives Matter protesters stormed the Capitol lawn. And what happened was is they took over an outpost. I believe they torched it. But at any rate, what happened was is they shut down the internet. The entire, I don't know how it was, the National Guard, whoever it was, they shut down the internet and they stopped the live streamers. It's been, they've had this technology here, and so they've been throttling the cell phone connections when we're out here and we're protesting. And what it does is it stops streamers and other people from being able to transmit messages.
Yep.
And so I was watching these live streams go down, and immediately all over Twitter, people were talking about hashtag DC blackout. Why is my cell phone service? Why is my internet cut? And the reason was is because the police were shooting live rounds, and this is all I don't know, speculation, because it's not confirmed. But that night, these live streams, they go down. The Secret Service or National Guard were shooting live ammunition at protesters. I don't know, people, because of this, we don't know if any protesters actually got shot. I hadn't heard of anything on DC on the Twitter over there, but it was.
Well, we know one got shot. One was shot and killed by police.
It was in DC.
Yeah.
No, I'm talking about in the summertime. I'm not talking about a couple.
Okay, we are all right. We're back in time. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying though is that's what happens when you storm a federal building like that. And so the idea that response to it, they actually did. They shut down the entire internet to stop transmission of information regarding it. But overall, what they were doing, though, is so at any rate, the secret, not the secret, but the Capitol Police guy, I think his name is David Liebengood, he killed himself. The police guy who killed himself 2 days ago or Friday, right? Did you hear about this?
Yes.
Okay. How convenient is it that a person who might be a whistleblower, who's in this probe and getting investigated for who let these people in, he's gonna kill himself? That guy was killed. They're tying up loose ends. And so I just want to say, it's like, it's easy to believe that the police officers just flashed their badge and we upheld the white supremacy, but something that I didn't hear mentioned was that fact that they actually deployed the National Guard the day before for the protest, and they called them back. So this was an inside coup. I'm comparing this to 9/11 because of the amount of forehand knowledge they had on it, and now, you know, and then acting surprised. Why did the secret police do that? And then I honestly think that your answer is just too easy to be like, oh, well, you know, they're just white, that's why they let them in. No, I think that this was, I mean, that might be a part of it, but on the larger side, they literally... you know, they literally let them in because they knew they wanted it to happen. But that's
okay.
Something
that I think we're going to leave it there, Robbie, so that we give some others a chance today. Mac and Tracy, have anything in response to that?
I absolutely feel it was an inside job. And same with, you know, Rep. Nierman in Oregon opening the door to the Capitol building and letting folks in. Absolutely an inside job. I think Trump was installing people in the Pentagon and other places to support his coup. And it does make sense that folks like Chad Wolf have resigned. I'm sure there's a there. I think it has everything to do with William Barr resigning. There's a there. So I'm not going to dismiss, you know, what Robbie is saying. I also don't want to glom on to conspiracy theories and, you know, appear to be in the same spirit as QAnon when we don't have these things verified. I think they're absolutely... just like there was a 9/11 commission, just like there was a commission on Benghazi, there needs to be a commission on this event to really expose some of those underpinnings that we don't really know all of the details at this point.
Yeah, I'd echo that. And I'd probably just add that as much as I don't know about the DC shutdown and all that kind of stuff, I do know just from spending a summer streaming that it definitely seems that they can turn off the internet as far as like streaming availability when they want to, because we've all dealt with that. And so I think it's like everything else. It's obviously an inside job because the president asked for it and no one's more inside than the president. Mm-hmm. And then beyond that, it's just like there's obviously a lot that they could have done that they did not do. I didn't see an LRAD. They have a lot of technology that was never deployed.
No.
They didn't shut down communications. So obviously, if you're talking about an inside job, that's what's going to happen. So I don't think there's a need for a conspiracy theory here. The conspiracy is right there, in the open.
Yeah, I would agree. All right, let's go to John. Good morning.
About 4 days before all this happened, I was watching this movie on Netflix called The Social Dilemma.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're familiar mm-hmm. with it. But it's a critique on all these programs like Instagram, Facebook, et cetera, et cetera. And what the movie was pointing out is a docudrama. They had these people who actually were the originators of all these programs. And they were just talking, about how it was sort of unethical what they were doing. They quit because of they were seeing that, wait a minute, you're trying to brainwash people over the computer. I mean, that's just my interpretation of it. So there was just all kinds of really things that they were pointing out since all these programs have been busting out for the last 10 years. One of the more things I would kind of point out how it the behavior changes of little girls between 10 and 14 and how the suicide rate went up like 300% in less than 8 years. So what I'm just trying to get this connection of how these programs like Facebook, Instagram, or whatever, and Tweet have, influenced people's behavior, just like these people who created the programs themselves. And this is sort of like, I don't know. I don't know if it's really the end result, but it sure had a lot of factors contributing to some of the behavior when I was seeing this on the TV. Mm-hmm. I just put in my concept of, this is a result of all these programs that Zuckerberg and all these people have been putting out. So that's about my 2 cents worth.
Hey, thank you, John. Appreciate the call. Yeah, I think the problem with social media is that, it's the ultimate medium for exacerbating the problems with confirmation bias. And confirmation bias is when you seek out information that reinforces that which you already believe to be true. And there's really no better place for that than social media platforms. And the flip side of that, of course, is even as your own biases are being confirmed, you're given a medium on which to anonymously flame people with whom you disagree. So, you're getting, it's a double whammy. Your biases are being exacerbated and you're given a consequence-free outlet to behave pretty badly. And thank you, social media, for bringing us to this point. Either of you have any comment on that?
I mean, I see
1,000%.
Yeah.
I see Fox News, OAN, Newsmax, Tucker Carlson's of the world, Laura Ingraham's of the world, Rush Limbaugh, and their 40 years of persistently flaming white rage, white grievance, grievance politics around the Democrats, around Nancy Pelosi, around, black and brown people taking over the country and, encouraging them to take back what's theirs, that it's not just social media, that there's other forms of media that continue to fan the flames of this fire that we're seeing.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Let's go to Anne, joining us this morning from Ashland. Good morning, Anne.
Hey, it's Vanna. Hey.
I'm sorry, Vanna. My apologies.
That is okay. I'm a BIPOC woman, and I'm not surprised by what happened in D.C., and I think anyone who has any sense of history, certainly black and brown people in this country, not surprised because the racism is just so baked into our DNA. I wish I had something to offer in terms of solutions. I don't. But, one of the reasons that white people, generally speaking, I mean, some of them are aware, but generally speaking, white people, they just do not, they don't understand or recognize how vicious their own kind can be, how vicious and how much venom white people can have in them, and it because it's not directed toward them, so they've never seen it, so they don't know. But that said, I've got a kind of a crazy question, but these are crazy times, so I'm just going to go there. There's been 3 times in my life that I have overheard a white person say that they had nightmares about black people. These were three different instances. The first two times, they did not know I heard them, because I overheard someone say this in a workplace, in a situation, two different people, two different times. And then a third time, someone said it, and I don't know, maybe they forgot I was, they were talking to a black person or something, but they disclosed this. And I'm just wondering, have, especially to the BIPOC people and the black people out there, I'm just, have you ever heard this? I mean, are they, do they naturally have nightmares about us as well, as we're going to try to get them? So I don't know, I'm just going to get off the line unless you have any questions, but I just had to pose that. Never publicly said that to anyone before, but it's just kind of came to my head today.
Hey, thank you very much, Anna. I appreciate the call.
Thank you.
The only black person I've ever had a nightmare about was Michael Jordan, but that's because he just used to destroy the Blazers back in the 90s. That's really
I've never had anyone tell me that to my face. So, you know, I do think there is a some kind of psychic, historical trauma that some white folks experience. And I think it is a vestige of slavery and holding people in bondage and feeling like at some point, right, the comeuppance is there. And I don't know what that is. I can't really put my finger on that. I've felt a sense of that, and people have shared in different ways that sentiment, that they feel like, you know, there's this psychic guilt for enslaving others that shows up in the form of fear of black people. But no one's ever told me they had a nightmare about me or a black person.
I can't say I've ever had anybody tell me they had a nightmare about black person in specific either. But I'm sure they do.
Yeah, I imagine it's out there. But, you know, if this is this, you know, the psychic fear, as you described it, I think pretty aptly, Tracy, if this is bubbling up in people and even manifesting in their dreams, and the source of it is, you know, I think not just the guilt over, historic guilt over slavery, but also perhaps a looming fear over the demographic inevitability that is confronting white people in this country. And if you're a white person and you're worried about that, if you live in fear of the day when you're no longer a numerical majority, you might want to ask yourself if perhaps the reason you're scared is that minorities historically have been treated pretty badly in this country. This seems to me like an opportunity for some self-reflection if you're scared of that sort of thing. Let's go to Marilyn. Good morning.
Hi. How are you? Good morning.
Hi.
Yes, it totally was an inside job, and also an outside job, because Amy Goodman said that Parler was funded by Rebecca Mercer. And then you have all these big money entities, and you have the Tea Party people funded by the Kochs, and then congressmen also invested in this, and one of them sent 80 busloads of people up to Washington. And all in all, there are only about 8,000 people there, so they're a very tiny minority of this country, truly, and a very radical, crazy, insane minority. And 8,000 is not very many of the people that rushed the Capitol. And I don't think we need to overestimate them too much, because law enforcement's going after them. Now, one thing that's been rubbing me the wrong way is people say, well, if Black Lives Matter did that, what would happen to them? Nothing, because Black Lives Matter would never do such an idiotic thing. And there's no equivalency. Black Lives Matter is about law and order and making things right, not about ripping things up. Now let somebody else talk.
Hey, thank you for the call. I've certainly seen people tie themselves into knots trying to make that equivalence, though. Mm. Back, Tracy, you have anything to say on that one?
Not me.
I don't believe that one alone.
Okay. I think that's fair. So let me ask you this, Mac. if we have as a society want to move to a more enlightened state of being, become a more equitable nation, finally bury white supremacy, you know, what can we do in the aftermath of this moment to move ourselves in that direction?
You know, I think that really, I've said it before, I think that the underpinnings of everything that we're going through, we're going to continue to have these mini revolutions, and it's going to start happening more and more and more and more. The way that America is set up now, capitalism and media, like I guess intensity, just continues to grow every day. Like, we tried to impeach the president a year ago, and that's not even anything that anyone is thinking about anymore. That was just a year ago, and it feels like ancient history. Like, nobody cares about that. Like, our president was exposed talking about sexually assaulting women on a tour bus at a Hollywood studio with everyone else, admitting to sexual assault, and people then came forward and said, I was assaulted in this way, and they were ignored. And he was elected the president of the United States. Like, it's like a soap opera. You know what I mean? Like, it starts off with, like, you know, John is screwing Sally's wife, but after like 16 seasons, it's like he came back from the dead and had a baby with an alien. You know what I mean? Like, you have to escalate. America's a soap opera. It's literally a show because we have these politicians who treat our lives as if they're brands. Like, everything is a brand, and all of us are just like a clip art. You know what I mean? And here we are, this clip art that's going to become a meme. You know what I mean? Some of us just make it, and some of us just don't. Some of us just end up in the scrap, and someone might grab you in 20 years, and you never know when it's going to be your time. It might never be your time. But we have this whole system, and someone just out there just playing with us. And we're like, hey, you built this country and this ability to control all of us and do all this damage to us at your profit for your leisure, on the backs of slavery and stolen land. And until that's rectified, there's never going to be peace. And it's not even going to be us doing it. It's going to be the white people doing it to themselves, because half of y'all are guilty, or excuse me, feel guilty, and the other half ignore it. And it's not our fault. We're just here, and we're reminders of that pain. And so we get treated badly. Natives, black people, Latinos, and even the immigrants, the Asians, everyone gets treated horribly here. Some people just work so hard just to maintain, just to fit in, and some of us are working so hard just to tear it down. It's the same thing on both sides, whether you're black or white or Asian or whatever. There's always going to be half of y'all that are just like, fine, I'll try it, and half of y'all that are just like, yo, if I have a chance, I'm taking a shot. And so this country just continues to just do this, and we blame each other. It doesn't make any sense. We have to fix the problem. We're all just crabs in the barrel. So all we can do is fight, right, for who's right and who's wrong. But at the end of the day, we're all going to be here, and we haven't fixed the problem. We have to fix the problem. There's got to be reparations. There's got to be land back. Until we can get to that point, it's not going to happen. The slower it happens, the more damage it's going to be. Just, you know, it's hard to say because it means a lot of damage. It means you've got to give up like 70-some trillion dollars to black people. It means you got to give all this land back to the natives, who really don't even want to keep it from you. They just need it to be dealt with in a certain way. And we're not doing that. And we it's just crazy because the people who call themselves the patriots are just afraid. And even the people who don't, a lot of people who don't call themselves patriots and are on the left or whatever, they are afraid to give a black people and native people the agency to make the decisions that we're supposed to be making. They don't want to give us cash. They want to build affordable housing because they don't want us to build wealth. They are not going to give the agency back to the natives because they want to abuse this land and be out of balance. And if we turn to balance, it means a lot less stuff, a lot less a stimulation. And America's all about escalating.
Hmm. So do you feel, after a summer of protest, in which many eyes were opened on the white side of the race class divide in this country, and after this shameful episode last week where the ugliness of white supremacy was laid bare for the whole world to see, do you feel like we're closer to a place where we can start to grapple with reparations and land back than we were before? I guess I'm saying, is there an opportunity created here?
I don't know. It really depends on how hard we go. And this is going to be I think people are watching it, you know, and like we're all making jokes. I know I'm on Twitter going off, but like, this is a really serious point in our country. Like, this could get really bad. Like, they're already talking about there's already more protests, you know, with arms this time than now planned at the capitals around. This is going to get violent. There's going to be, there were five people killed. Five people died. There could be way more this next time. They're talking about bringing guns now. They weren't even bringing guns last time. We've seen shootings. It's not like it's out of the way. In Olympia, somebody got shot. I know in Salem, people have been getting shot. So people are getting shot in real time. So now we're going to combine the two. People are going to die. A lot of people are going to die around the country. And this is going to be, this is a real turning point. So we talk about, is it time, you know, for reparations? Depends who dies. I don't know. You know? So I'm really watching and staying out of the mix. Like, this isn't my fight. This is a fight that people have to figure out, and we have to capture the soul. You know, but this violence, it's not cute. Not cute at all.
Tracy, got anything to add to that?
I mean, so of course, I even last week when we noted that there were, you know, planned protest demonstrations would likely become a riot, might become violent. I don't want to call that into the universe. However, I feel like it's already out there, right? I talked about that kind of Pandora's box that has been fueled by, you know, grievance and strife and being told that what is yours is being taken away. I feel like it's already out there. And I'm just hoping that people who have a conscience, who don't want to participate, don't show up at these sites and do counter-protests or counter-insurgencies, like, stay away. And I agree, Matt. That this is not our fight. This is, you know, theirs to own and theirs to control and manage. And if it means that, you know, white people kill cops or cops kill other people and some supporters, that's a terrible thing that we will have to reckon with. But I really hope that it doesn't come to that, that it doesn't continue to become this thing that doesn't allow us to really see the conception and the false conception of America and begin to really live out in that aspirational, you know, we are all created equal. We, you know, live in a society that, you know, allows people, every person, to be self-actualized and enjoy, you know, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I truly believe that because I'm a namby-pamby in some ways, but also an idealist and an optimist in other ways. And I just feel like we'll never get there if we don't deal with this in this moment in the right way. We cannot do a reconstruction part two, right? Like where we just say, oh, we've been purged against our country, we're going to let you back in and we're going to forget about it. No, we absolutely need to deal with this in this moment. And it really is on the leaders of our country, including the Joe Biden administration, to shut down that crap about healing and unity, because you can't heal until the bleeding stops.
Really? Yeah. That's, I mean, true. You got to do something. You know, you can't just be dragging your feet on this. It's got to get done. You know what I mean? Like, it's going to be ugly and it's going to hurt everybody, but, like, it's got to get done. You got to just cut the cancer out at some point. So we got to be really careful how we go forward. You know, we don't want to become that which we hate, but at the same time, you know, we got to make sure that things are really taken care of. I think it's going to be a dark decade for us.
I fear you might be right, but I also like to think that we are equipped with the tools we need to rationally move ourselves forward.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just hoping that some way we can ensure that cooler heads prevail.
Well, you know, and regardless of what happens, I think it's important that we really focus our, you know, our resources into mutual aid and taking care of each other. This is what we talk about, and this is why. Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, when this all, you know, all happens, if it all happens, when it all happens, I guess, you know, it really is important that we can take care of each other. I feel like in our Black communities, do we have security? Do we have protection? Do we have resources? Do we have food availability? Are we dependent on the state to eat? You know, what is, you know, is there housing certainty? What can we do to ensure that, you know, us as people, as citizens, you know, our population that care about each other are taken care of? So, you know, there's a lot to be said for, you know, physical fighting and whatnot, but I think there's a lot to, you know, standing up and carrying signs and whatnot, but I think that there's a lot also to be done as far as the preparation goes, and I think a lot of people are doing that work, and that's really remarkable.
Well, I think we're going to leave it there as we are out of time. Mac, it was really an honor to have you on. I really appreciate you making the time for us this morning.
Hey, a pleasure. Thank you guys so much.
Tracy, send us home.
I'm going to send it home by of course, thanking Mac. Thank you, listeners, and for folks who called in today. We absolutely, at this point in our, you know, lives, have to wrap our arms around each other as much as we can. We've got to take care of each other and ourselves. Please continue wearing your mask. The pandemic has hit fever pitch. Wear your mask, social distance. Call your grandma, call your auntie, do a Zoom. But right now we really need to stay safe and you know, keep ourselves and our families safe. So that's all I'll end with. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday, and we'll see you back.
You are tuned into listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Ever wonder what happens to your Fred Meyer reward points? Now you can turn them into excellent community radio by linking your Fred Meyer rewards card to KBOO. Look up KBOO or our ID number 866.